And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow. Glad to be with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll continue to look ahead to Super Bowl 51. We'll discuss a variety of Giants topics as well, including draft, prospects, that may be on the Giants' radar, as well as some free agency moves. So a lot to delve into over the next hour. But we thought we'd start talking about some Super Bowl 51 storylines, as well as just the overall Super Bowl preparations that players need to go through as they get set for the big game. And, Paul, obviously from covering the Giants, you can relate from some of the circumstances that surrounded the Giants' prep work when they faced the Patriots most recently in 07 and 11. It's interesting because it used to be where you'd have the conference championship games,
yeah,
and then you'd go right into the Super Bowl. Then obviously they started to implement the process where you had 2 weeks. And, you know, I know you and I were talking before the show, and we seem to be in agreement where I like where the championship game mimics what the regular season is all about. And with the exception of your bye week, you're playing every single week. And you treat every week like it is, and you prepare accordingly. When you have the 2 weeks, there are certainly some additional challenges now that you have to account for because you don't usually get 2 weeks in between games.
From a football perspective, if you're talking about a coach, a player, a media guy, I really like having the Super Bowl 1 week after the championship games. I think there is more continuity. I think there is more flow. It just seems right. It seems normal. We're creatures of habit in this game. However, I will say this. The flip side of that is, if you got the 2 weeks and you play the Pro Bowl in that off week, it kind of makes the Pro Bowl a little more interesting for me because it's football. I mean, when the Pro Bowl was played after the Super Bowl,
yeah,
it was such a throwaway. Not that a lot of people put much significance in it anyway these days. But it gives you that consistent week of football. You know, even though it's not real, you know, chew on it kind of football, it gives you that consistent week of football. The NFL still has a presence, and that allows you to go right through. And at least for me, I do like the Pro Bowl in that off week. But that's simply a far-reaching fan perspective saying, oh, that's kind of nice. From a football angle, you and I are on the same page here. The Super Bowl really should be a week after the championship games. It was in 90 because of Desert Storm. They did not wait the extra week. The Giants had to fly directly from San Francisco right to Tampa. Of course, they took care of business and beat Buffalo. But the storylines get so drawn out over the two-week period,
yeah,
that, look, I don't mind telling you, it is, and I know you fans, you're going to say, well, what does it matter? It does matter because the workload that we go through, I will tell you right now, the week of a Super Bowl, I literally spend 14 hours a day straight working, whether it's writing stuff, doing radio, doing TV, doing interviews, going to practices, or not practices, but going to, because we don't get to see practices, but going to press conferences,
events
and stuff. And when I tell you, at least for me, I'm a workaholic, and they're 14-hour days. When I was in Indianapolis,
which was the 2011 game.
Yes. The good news about that was, it was a closed-in city, very close city. It's a small city, so you can get everywhere you got to go, and you don't have to take any transportation.
You don't have to worry about long traffic. And so
That made it easier. But, like, Arizona?
You're, like, in the middle of nowhere for that one, if I'm correct.
Oh, man. Yeah. I was working for the ESPN radio at the time, and I had to stay in the ESPN radio complex. They had rented a resort out in Scottsdale that they totally took over. It became the ESPN commune, if you wish.
Yeah.
Well, it
mimics what their campus looks like at Bristol.
Right.
They sort of have a mini setup
okay.
to that. Yeah.
And that turned my days into 17-hour days because I had to get the commuting to and from Scottsdale to get to Phoenix. All right. Here's my point. Long way to get there. When it's a week, everything you're doing as a media person is meaningful. You're in go, go, go mode. Every story angle, every single day means something because you got to go to this presser, you got to go to that presser, you got to see those players, you got to get those interviews done. Today I'm working on an offensive story. Tomorrow I'm working on a defensive story. Next day I'm working on special teams. Every single day, it feels like there's something to chew on.
Well, and there's also new and fresh material, like you said, because you don't have to now revisit maybe what was brought up the week off, and now all of a sudden you're doing perhaps an update on that.
Right.
And here's the other thing.
The 2 weeks just drags. Well, it just drags.
And the other reason why I'm also for having the game immediately after the conference championships, and this is more about me wanting the championship to mimic what happens in the regular season. For example, Paul, I'll use baseball as an analogy. They used to give a lot of days off in between baseball playoff series and the World Series, and
yes,
then they stopped doing that so you could get away with a three-man rotation. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have depth, if the back end of your starting rotation is not
correct,
strong, you get away with the first three guys, and you're
yep,
fine, right?
Yep.
So it doesn't truly mimic what the regular season is like. If you have players that are banged up on a football team and you get 2 weeks off, you're now in much better position health-wise because you now give your players an extra week off to prepare for the game. If you're coming off of the conference championship game, you're banged up, it once again mimics what's going on in the regular season where sometimes guys don't have a quick recovery time. They don't have a lot of flexibility to turn things around quickly to get ready for the game. So that's why I like the Super Bowl immediately following the conference championship games. I understand there's logistics, tickets, players need to get their families prepared. It's not easy to get everybody in one location when you don't know whether or not you're going to be in the game. So I understand that, but I think we're in agreement from an X's and O's standpoint. I think it definitely resembles the regular season a little bit better. And we're curious your thoughts, you know, what you would like to see moving forward, whether or not there's a positive to have the two-week hiatus or you like it where it goes right in from the conference championship game. The other thing is if they move the Pro Bowl back after the Super Bowl, you would give players who took part in the Super Bowl an opportunity to take part in the Pro Bowl too, Paul, who actually made it. You know, so
yeah,
for example, members of the Patriots and Falcons who actually wanted to play in the game, but they're not going to risk injury the week before, now have an opportunity to take part in that contest, assuming they want to play. But that at least gives them the flexibility from that standpoint.
We know where at least two Giants are this week. Rashad Jennings did the TV circuit yesterday in Houston, and I see Marshall Newhouse is on Radio Row today.
So there you go. Giants making their presence felt.
they're taking part in the
correct,
the media frenzy.
Which is normal when it comes to Super Bowl week. You don't necessarily have to take part in the game. But a lot of players, Paul, and I'm sure you can relate stories about this, a lot of players will tell you if they're not in the game, they don't want to be anywhere near Houston because the emotion of not making it, it's painful for them. I know a lot of players who have said that in passing. They just don't want to have anything to do with the Super Bowl festivities because it's too much.
Some guys don't want any part of it at all. Other guys will do all the marketing stuff during the week because they want to get the exposure, they want to get the Q factor, and then they bolt on Saturday.
They don't want to see the game. Correct.
Some of them don't want to see it because, literally, they believe if they're not playing in the game, they don't belong there.
It's understandable.
And as a pro, it hurts them to be at that game. They refuse. No, I don't belong in that game unless I'm playing in it. There are other guys who are superstitious about it. They won't go to the game because they believe if they do, they'll never get there as a player.
Sort of a jinx in some respect. Hey, listen, everybody's got their own issues when it comes to whether or not they want to be there. But I think we can certainly say that a number of players are thinking that through before automatically going down to the location of where the Super Bowl is held. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com, Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. It is Super Bowl week, so we have discussed some of the storylines there, but we will open up to some Giants discussion. You want to get into free agency, you want to get into the draft, and so forth.
I want to also address today's NFL.com issue. They polled 16 of their finest experts to ask for the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. And wouldn't you know, Khalil Mack and Landon Collins, the two runaway co-favorites. And it's going to be interesting. I think Mack is going to get it myself. I don't think Collins will, but I'm really glad to see Landon get so much support.
Absolutely. And if I'm correct, Mack already won Defensive Player of the Year. Wasn't it from the Pro Football Writers Association?
Yes.
Correct. He won Defensive Player of the Year through that. So he's already received some accolades with respect to that.
The NFL Honors, which is the official unveiling of the
which
real
the
NFL awards, comes up on Saturday.
Yeah. So you we'll know And Eli Manning is up, too, for his community service. So that's another thing to look out for. Be very interested to see if the Giants walk away with some individual hardware. But that event will be the night before the Super Bowl. So obviously we'll have plenty to talk about next week between the game and the honors. With that being said,
I love
one more nugget.
I love that the godfather of football, Gil Brandt, has picked Landon Collins. Because he is.
Well, and then
he is the godfather of football.
Yes, Gil Brandt, indeed. That's
I
what
love
they call
Gil Brandt.
The godfather
I love Gil Brandt.
On SiriusXM NFL Radio. And it's interesting because the title of his article looks like he had a little write-up. Landon Collins looked like a new man in year two. And I think that we brought up that subject time and time again throughout the season, the jump that he made from one year to the other. Quite impressive, and something that Giants fans can look forward to because he has just arrived in the league. Still a young guy, still honing his craft, and even some of the guys around him are young too. So it's nice to see a young nucleus that the Giants can continue to build upon moving forward. All right, let's open up the phone lines here. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Travis is in Queens. He gets us going on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are we doing, Travis?
Hello, guys. How are you guys doing? Happy afternoon to you guys.
Same to you, Travis. What do you got for us?
I was thinking, right, like, I was, like, doing some assessment, like, looking over our years with the offense that we had. And I was saying to myself, you know, maybe our tackles got exposed so much this year because our wide receivers couldn't get open. So I was saying, quick enough, in the offense that we run since it's a West Coast offense. So I was saying to myself, maybe come draft that 23rd pick, if a wide receiver is there, like Mike Williams or somebody that's, you know, that's, you know, great. I think I would go there because I think if you draft a wide receiver, that will help the offensive line out, whereas they don't have to, you know, block for so long. And plus, you know, they're not really supposed to in a West Coast offense, not for too long, you know, like the standard type of offense. So what you got to think about that?
Well, I mean, I still think that goes back to Eli Manning and getting rid of the football quickly, not so much whether or not the wide receivers are getting open. And Manning, for the most part, gets rid of the football rather quickly if you look at what he's done under Ben McAdoo's offense. So what you're alluding to, I mean, it won't hurt, Travis, if they bring in another wide receiver. I mean, look at what Sterling Shepard brought to this team. I think there's room for youth to contribute, but at the same time, I mean, I don't think why the offense struggled to put up points consistently was because there wasn't a number of playmakers or enough talent in the receiving core. I think it was just the combination of a variety of factors. You know, some of it was offensive line, some of it was the lack of balance between the running game and the passing game, but I don't know if necessarily drafting a wide receiver per se in the first round, using your throwout and your idea there, is going to automatically solve some of the other issues that, to me, really didn't have anything to do with the receiving core.
Because the reason why I referenced that was because you just hit on it a little bit, too. Like, this year, you know, every team has holes. So you got to patch up the holes. And earlier this year, I heard Paul say a great deal. What I was alluding to myself was that, you know, like when we were struggling, like in the middle of the year, you know, reference about, you know, jumbo package, where that would help the offensive line, it would help the running backs, and so on and so forth. So I just think adding maybe another wide receiver, that's like an Odell that could stretch the field, whereas, you know, because this year Odell didn't really have a lot of big plays down the field. It was like more.
Correct. It was a lot of yardage after the catch, though you don't get brownie points, Travis, whether you catch the ball 60 yards down the field or you catch it 5 yards and you turn it into a 65-yard gain. I mean, it really doesn't make a difference. I think having a vertical threat is good. Let me ask you this, though, just out of curiosity, because Tavares King had some flashes when he was given some playing time later. Does that fit your bill of maybe what you're calling for with respect to a vertical threat?
Right, yeah, definitely, and it's funny that you mentioned him because when I was calling you guys, I was always bringing up his name, you know, because the flashes that he showed in preseason. So I'm like, you know, and Roger Lewis, like he must do very good, like he must do good in practice because to put him over Tavares King in the live game, it was mind-boggling. You know what King presented was more of a threat, which we had seen, than Roger Lewis in a little short time, you know, that.
All right.
That
he, I tell you what, let me just capsulize all my answers for you here because I've kind of stayed back and listened to you. First of all, Roger Lewis plays special teams and does a good job at it, especially in the coverage units. That's why he got the jersey ahead of Tavares King, because receiver-wise, they both brought something to the table in practice. But Lewis was a far better special teams player and also a much more well-rounded receiver in terms of his route-running capabilities. So that's why he's ahead of him. In terms of going out and getting another receiver, I do think the Giants need to enhance their competition at the position. I would not argue with that, but it's got to be a skyscraper.
Yeah.
In my mind, if it's not a skyscraper, I don't think they're doing themselves any favor by bringing in another Smurf. I would also say this to you, in terms of what you said about the routes before, there's no question in my mind that with Eli trying to get rid of the ball at under 2.5 seconds a throw, that the Giants had troubles getting the ball spread around to as many guys as they wanted to because there were routes that took too much time to develop. Listen, Victor Cruz, by far, was one of the best slot receivers in football. Last year, in addition to him coming back after a year and a half off, they switched his position, they put him on the outside, which made him run different routes, deeper routes, routes that took longer to develop, routes that are going to be outside the numbers, okay, which means if the ball's going to get there, it needs more time to get there, not to mention that he was running deeper routes. So you must take all of that into consideration. So you are absolutely right that one of the reasons that Beckham got by far the most targets on the team this year is because he happens to get the quickest and the largest bit of separation of practically anybody in this league.
Naturally,
if Eli's got 2.5 seconds to get rid of it, who's the guy he's going to throw it to? I mean, that just increased his percentage of targets.
Right, and the team this year was just saying, you know what, let's play the cover two, let's just keep a safety deep and give them the under and double him, you know, and let the other two get open. But my question to you too, Paul, and this is my last question about the Super Bowl, right? Because I want to bet. I got a friend who want to place a bet, right? And I want to bet so bad. And I want to bet the Falcons because I know he's a Patriots fan, right? but my problem is betting is Bill Belichick. I tell everybody, I said, Bill score it all. So do you think the Falcons can, like, when you compare the Falcons to the team like the Buffalo Bills was when the Giants beat them in the Super Bowl and also to, like, the Rams, the fastest show on turf. Can you compare them to those two teams?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think what's going to happen here is that Belichick will totally outcoach Quinn. There was a number that NFL Network just put up overnight, and I just retweeted it here during our program that, let's see, here it is. Since 2010, coaches are 3-22 in their first career game against Bill Belichick. 3-22. I mean, you talk about preparation. This guy is far and beyond what anybody could imagine in terms of preparation. He prepares in his sleep. That's how crazy he is. Okay? Now, to Tom Coughlin's credit, Tom went and beat him twice in the Super Bowl. Right. And I thought outcoached him both times, to be perfectly frank with you.
I think so.
But that is a rarity. You're not going to put Dan Quinn in Tom Coughlin's drawer. These guys are not the same. Here's what I'm going to tell you. In addition to that, in my mind being a big factor why I'm picking the Patriots to win this game, the other factor is overwhelming when you look at the matchup. Which teams, not only in the past in big games in Super Bowls, but also which teams this year gave the Patriots the most trouble? Teams that had an across-the-board pass rush. The Falcons are top-heavy. It's Beasley, and it's really nobody Yeah,
Freeney's a rotational player. He's not an every down
player.
And
he's even not that forceful anymore.
And they also have a very young secondary. Let's not forget about that.
Correct.
A lot of inexperience back there.
And that is the one thing you have to have if you are going to discombobulate and dishevel the Patriots' attack. Because they are so poised. They are so fundamentally sound. They are so versatile. They are so smart. The only way to mess them up, especially in a game of this nature, is if you have an entire full-fledged pass rush that can get at Brady, not from just one guy or two guys. You got to be able to show him multiple looks, and you got to be able to get pressure on him in numerous ways. Well, guess what? Falcons can't do it.
Right.
I'm not going to bet. You can't.
Yeah, I can't.
Not if you don't want to lose your money. You can't. You cannot bet against the Patriots in this game.
Right. And let me squeeze in one question. I'm going to take it off the air. And you guys have a great week. If hypothetical, I have Deshaun Watson is there at 23. Do you guys take him? Take care.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Travis. Thanks so much for chiming in. One thing I wanted to add about the Patriots before we get to his Deshaun Watson question, the quarterback for Clemson, is the fact that Atlanta went up against three top 10 ranked defenses this season, Paul, to build off of your point. They went up against the Seahawks, they went up against the Broncos, they went up against the Chiefs. They were 1-2 in those games. So the point is when they've gone up against defenses too, that have put some pressure on that offensive line, they've struggled. Because you were bringing up the point about how the defense can handle Tom Brady, but also when they've gone up against fronts that are a little bit stronger. And I'm not saying New England has an overwhelming pass rush, but New England has the number one scoring defense.
Schematically.
Correct. Yeah.
They're as good as anybody.
No doubt. And they're very disciplined. They have a very good secondary with Malcolm Butler and Logan Ryan, Devin McCourty. So you look at the pieces on New England's defense versus Atlanta's defense, I think the heavy significant edge is in favor of New England there.
I just think, and again, folks, remember what we've been talking about. Lance and I have been doing a ton of shows here during the playoffs. It's not about who's the better team necessarily. It's about the matchups. This matchup is pretty strong for the Patriots in a lot of ways.
Well, and bringing it back to the AFC Conference Championship, you look on paper, you say, the Steelers have a lot of offensive weapons. Nobody's going to deny them that, but it's the Steelers' zone defense that they have stuck to all these years, trying to slow down Tom Brady, and Brady looks at the zone defense and he says, I got some space there, I'm going to throw it there, I've got some space there, as opposed to teams that have gone man-to-man, which I think have flustered Brady a little bit more.
Now, we also know that Belichick's MO from the defensive side of the deal is to, okay, we're going to take away that weapon, that top key weapon, right, and we're going to contain everybody else, but we're taking away that one guy. Well, if you remember, against the Red Gun, it was his plan, we're going to take away Jim Kelly. Okay? We will wreck his receivers, and Thurman Thomas can run for 100-plus yards. It does not matter. They will not beat us if he runs for 100-plus yards. Now, I know it came down to a missed field goal. I get it. But the game plan and the strategy was brilliant because it made it possible for the Giants to win. Had Kelly thrown for 375 yards that day, or 400 yards that day, and three touchdowns, the Giants would not have been in that game. So, understand his philosophy. Well, I'm going to tell you, here's what I would do if I were Belichick. Going by his MO, I would say, Julio Jones, you can catch eight passes for 130 yards. And guess what? We're not going to get the touchdown. He will not catch it. If I were Belichick, my game plan would be, my philosophy would be, Jones can catch his 8 for 138. He can catch his 8 for 140. He's not going to catch a touchdown. And, because I'm going to give him some of what he wants, and I'm not going to let the Falcons run for more than 120 yards. And if he does that, This might not even be a touchdown game. That's how far the Patriots might win this game.
Well, they're very good in the red zone. Here's the other thing. Atlanta's defense is terrible in the red zone. They have barely been able to stop anybody. They've gotten to the quarterback with Vic Beasley, but then once you get inside the 20, it's like a field day for you to get touchdowns. So that's another issue.
And that's why I think he's willing to give up some on the ground.
Well, no, and I'm thinking the same lines that you are, but here's the thing. When you say 120 yards, I'm just curious, are you factoring in what Freeman and Coleman do as receivers? Because I think you have to think that way as well, Paul. It's not just so much what they do on the ground. So when you say 120, is 120 a
Thurman
combination?
Thurman Thomas was a receiver, too, coming out of the backfield.
He was.
The idea was that he was not – he was going to be allowed to run for 100-plus, and the Giants would be able to contain the rest of them. So I'm simply saying the ground game of the Falcons on the ground, forget about the receiving stuff, the ground game, they could run for a 120, and that's not going to bother Belichick. Running.
The problem is, though, they can also catch for about 90 to 100.
Well, Thurman Thomas was capable of doing that, too, but that was not part of his equation. I'm trying to get into Belichick's head here based on what he does, and that's what I think he's probably going to do. If you were to ask him next week, what was your game plan in winning the Super Bowl, I suspect it would be something along the lines of what I just told you.
See, I was thinking that perhaps he's going to look at it what he did against Seattle. If you remember, Chris Matthews had the big game against Seattle. Doug Baldwin was very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me is thinking he's looking at the roster and he's saying, let's see if Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel, and their tight ends can consistently make plays throughout this game. And if they're going to beat us, then more power to them by using those weapons.
I don't think there's any question about that, but that's why I'm saying what he does not want have to happen, or what he does not want to happen, I should say. He does not want Jones getting off for 180 yards, and he does not want Jones catching two touchdowns. Even probably one is too much. I think he's going to say, hey, Matt, you want to throw a bunch of little 8-yard, 10-yard passes to Julio Jones? We'll give you that.
Just nothing vertically.
Julio Jones is not putting up 220 against us. He's not catching 12 against us, and he's not catching 2 or 3 touchdown passes against us. That's not going to happen. Go ahead. Give the ball to front to Freeman. Go ahead. Give it to Coleman. You want to run for a 120 as a team? Run for a 120 as a team. Because ultimately, what I just described to you really is very similar to what you're saying. Let those other three guys try to beat me. We're basically kind of on the same page there.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Lance Meadow, Paul DeTito with you here on Giants.com. You threw out earlier the fact about how first-time head coaches against Belichick are 3-22 overall. I'm curious, do you factor in that Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator for the Seahawks 2 years ago? I know he wasn't a head coach.
That's not what the NFL Network stat includes. And no, I don't think that's relevant. I think that, you know, there were two guys, I'm sorry, three guys in my entire NFL career who are totally unpredictable. They are so smart. They are so good at their preparation that you really don't know what they're going to do to you on Sunday. Bill Belichick is one. Mike Martz, as an offensive coordinator, was another. Although, quite frankly, I didn't think he was a great head coach. As an offensive coordinator, players told me time and time and time again, you could study 4 weeks of film like they usually do. They usually study 3 to 4 weeks of film. And not figure anything out, because everything you saw, he would have a bunch of new stuff that you would see on Sunday that you did not even see once during the course of those films. Legendary players would tell me that. So Martz was another one. The other one was Capers.
Defensive coordinator. Defensive Packers
coordinator.
Now. Also
who,
previous head coach.
Yeah. Who, as a coordinator, could throw out such a pancake mix at you on Sunday that I didn't see that. I didn't see that in practice. Really? Did you see that? I didn't see that. That's the kind of stuff that Bill Belichick will do on Sunday to these guys. The Patriots are going to really confuse the Falcons a lot.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I've said that pretty much from the beginning. I'm with you. I think New England is going to win this game. Before we head back to the phone lines, the previous caller, last question was with respect to the Giants draft, 23. I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to be there. So, I mean, to me, we could play the hypothetical game, but I think he's going to be off the board.
I'm not taking him anyway.
I mean, that was the question, but I don't even think the Giants are going to be in a position to even consider it because I don't think that he's going to be there. And, you know, I think the Giants also need to look at it from this perspective. If you feel as if this team is still very much in playoff contention and Eli Manning is your quarterback, if you draft a quarterback in the first round, you're not getting any benefit out of your first-round pick for another, what, 3 to 4 years, let's say, if Eli decides to retire, and who knows. Whereas on this team right now, Paul, if I'm drafting this year in the first round, don't I want a guy that's going to walk in like Eli Apple and he's going to get reps?
Well, I certainly believe, and it was one of the reasons that, you know, you remember when I was high on Brandon Scherff a couple of years back, he was a plug-and-play lineman who could play right away. Zach Martin, same thing. Play him right away. I'm of the opinion that the Giants, with their closing window around Eli Manning, they need production immediately. We talked about this actually before this past season's draft. And I think I said to you at that point, Lance, the Giants better get production, immediate production, out of 4 or 5 of these guys right away. They can't afford to wait. And they did. And that's one of the reasons they made the playoffs, in addition to all the free agents they signed.
No, but,
they got
class,
production.
No, you're 100% right, Paul. I think one of the lost storylines in this season that people don't necessarily focus on is the immediate impact of the rookie class. Eli Apple came in, started, got key reps. Paul Perkins, late-round pick, had opportunities late in the season but contributed.
Shepherd.
Jarrell Adams, Sterling Shepard. I mean, that's 4 guys right there. And even B.J. Goodson on special teams. Not overwhelming, but you know what? Got some reps,
well,
gave some contributions. Darian Thompson's the only guy, and that was simply because he was unhealthy.
Well, and to be honest, you know, when you talk about a rookie class, you can't ignore the free agents.
The
and Andrew Adams started virtually the whole season at safety.
And then Romeo Okwara, you got to throw in too for having some flashes here or there. So you're right. It goes even beyond the rookie class, the ones that were drafted, of course. So that, to me, is something that, you know, you may not look back and say, oh, wow, it was such a big storyline, but it's significant because that's what you want to be able to do again this year,
well,
where you want to bring in 5 or 6 guys and whether it be over the course of the year, early in the season, late in the season, that they've at least put their stamp on this
Let's
game?
Not kid ourselves. Without the 2007 rookie class, the Giants don't beat the Patriots, you know, for the Super Bowl. Doesn't happen.
Absolutely. Mod Bradshaw and company. Can't overlook that group. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. So glad you could tune in to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Nick in New York. Nick, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
It's actually Nick in the Meadowlands.
Nick in the Meadowlands. Okay, Nick.
Yeah. He's right next door.
Next door. I was going to say, why don't you knock on the door? We'll let you in.
Yeah. Well, come on in. We'll put you on camera.
And what's up, Paulie Walnuts?
How you doing?
What's up, buddy?
Good to talk to you.
Pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
Listen, I think a quarterback, everybody needs to hold their horses, man. I think next year is definitely your better year. If you're going to do anything, I think this year, you know, you go elsewhere. Defensive ends, cornerbacks, definitely a tight end to complement Jarrell Adams. I think he's going to do better in year two. Big receiving tight end, if you can get him. But Landon Collins, isn't he the first player to have 100-plus tackles and 5 sacks and – or, I'm sorry, 5 interceptions and 4 sacks to – I think he definitely should get Defensive Player of the Year, you know. Definitely. I'm buying his jersey. I got plenty of Giants jerseys, especially DRC's jersey. Love DRC, love Giants, and I wore 41 in high school and college. But I'm getting Landon Collins. I love that guy. But,
I mean, to just respond to what you just said, Nick, real quickly, I mean, Khalil Mack, if he wins it, I mean, I don't think that's a robbery. He had a tremendous season.
You're right.
You know, Landon Collins has some competition in that department. You're right. I mean, Collins deserves consideration. He's right up there.
The numbers say it all. I mean, he had a wow year, you know. But yesterday, Lance, we were talking about the wideout thing. I wanted a vet, you know, taller than Victor Cruz. A guy that, you know, can put up numbers, you know, and somebody in the locker room, I was telling you, not wide receiver locker room, because I think, you know, I think, you know, maybe I didn't say it right, you know, yesterday. Maybe, you know, I didn't mean to say it like they lost the game because of that. You know, the defense did great in the first half, but the, you know, the second half of the game, we know what happened. But, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that two guys dropped the same pass, basically, right in the same spot in the end zone. I mean, one of those two gets caught, we're not even talking about it. But I think, you know, you go see your family, you go do whatever, that's different. That's routine. Even on the next level, you don't see them as much. You're excited to see them, but it's something that you're used to. Just keep it routine until you're done. You can go do all the playing you want whenever you win. Just keep that in mind. I mean, let me ask you something. Did you ever play football?
Well, I played football when I was little. I mean, I'm not saying that I was playing when I was in college.
College level, because, you know, distractions. If you do something different than what another guy does, like an Odell Beckham, he goes and does that all the time, but other guys don't, you know.
Yeah, so but Nick,
he persuades them to do that, something they're not used to doing. They have guilt in their mind. You don't know what went
well,
on. Who knows?
Nick, I mean, listen,
things can definitely mess a guy up when other guys are sitting there doing what they're supposed to do until the job is done.
Nick, in my opinion, that's all I was saying about that.
That's not the reason
Let me just jump in here real quick.
I was just saying, when you play a game, it's like a fighter. What's a fighter do? What did Mickey say? Women weaken legs, right, Rock? Women weaken legs, and that's true. You train, you preparate until the job is done.
Nick, but let me ask you this question, okay? I brought this up on yesterday's show. Odell Beckham had a number of drops throughout the regular season. Roger Lewis dropped the balls. Did at one point, when you saw those drops during the regular season, did you wonder what those guys did during the course of the week? Did you wonder whether or not they changed?
But
what's the difference
game,
then? What's
in
the difference?
That's in everybody's mind now. We know, okay, we're in the dance, we got a chance. Now let's catch the damn ball. You know, one out of the two, perfect. You know, I would like, you know, you wouldn't have seen if the other one caught the first pass, you wouldn't have seen the number two. But somebody else drops the ball too. I mean, who knows, but let's get past it. I was just trying to say that's not what I meant by that. I just meant sometimes distractions, and you know that you did something wrong, it can play a part in your focus on a game, you know, on a big game. I've been in some big games in my life, and I've seen guys screw up because they, you know.
I just think, I mean, part of me just thinks you're reading way too much into it. You're entitled to your opinion, and everybody's allowed to throw that out.
No, I didn't disagree with you. I was just saying, you know, we don't know what went on down there, you know, but one guy does it after every game, and other guys don't do it, and maybe that, you know, who knows? You know what I mean? I'm still a little sour about the loss, you know. I love my Giants, you know.
But, understandable.
I just want them to catch the ball whenever it means something big. You know what I mean? Definitely. Like, I want you to preparate 155%. You know what I mean? Go balls to the wall. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
No distractions. Not until the job's done. You could go for, you know, if I was a – this is why I want a veteran in there. If I'm a veteran, I'm telling you, you know, like Victor Cruz coming out saying, you know, because he feels guilty about it because, you know, the whole week – media, the whole nine yards. It's a distraction for everybody and yourself. But I want a guy in there that's going to say, hey, listen, let's go get this win, guys. Then the next one and the next one, and we get a ring. We all get it. And let's all be on the same page, because if we're not, then we know what happens. We have to be fully, fully prepared. No distractions, nothing. And he didn't do that, and he regrets it now, because you have a mouth. You know, you've been in the locker room for a while. Tell these guys, you know, hey, maybe we shouldn't do that. Let's focus. After the vacation or after the Super Bowl or whatever, after, you know, they would have gone deep in the playoffs, who knows?
Nick, we're going to let you go.
Two weeks or whatever.
I hear you. And to be honest, it would have been my preference that they did not go on the trip either, but I don't think it is nearly as much of an infraction as the critics would like to make it out to be. So I do think you need to take a breath on this and relax. I would tell you that if you're going to add someone to the wide receiver room, okay, and again, I'm strictly talking about guys who are going to be pending unrestricted free agents, because to me, you know, either you're going to go young and get someone in the draft, okay, because you think he really has some super-duper skills and you want him to be part of the core for a long time, or you're going to go for a guy who's been around a little while, but again, going to be a skyscraper, but is still on the younger side. A guy like Andre Holmes, for me, who had no drops this year. He's produced. He's been around for a couple of years. He's 28 years old. He's a terrific special teams player. He's 6'4". You know, he fits a lot of the categories. That would be a guy, my perspective, what I think the Giants could use. I think he checks a lot of boxes, and I don't suspect he's going to necessarily command Fort Knox kind of money either. But you could go that way if you really want a veteran to add to the room. Or you could say, no, you know what? We think these guys will grow up on their own, and we'll just go and add another rookie. You could go either way. I'm not going to argue with you on that. But I would like to see a bigger, taller receiver in the mix. That's about the only thing I will agree on.
Well, and that's something that, like I said, and like you just alluded to, I mean, it can be addressed, whether it be in free agency or the draft. I mean, look at some of the recent drafts. There's been a number of tall wideouts that have gone early, and I'm not saying that the Giants are going to be in position to take caliber players like this, but, you know, I think of Mike Evans. You know, he was a tall receiver that Tampa Bay took. Kelvin Benjamin went to the Carolina Panthers. He was another tall target, and, you know, these guys have flourished from their rookie campaigns and on. So we've seen teams. They go the route of bringing in a tall target, and then those players certainly contribute on the outside.
Well, the one problem is, though, that I don't think you're going to get one of those guys right there in the first round at 23. I think there you're looking at more of a pass rusher. If you know, if you're not going to get a tackle, you're going to look for more of a pass rusher in that spot. I would think. To my way of thinking, again, it's just me. I think you can get those kinds of guys who can be really productive in the third round. You can find those guys.
Yes, absolutely. You probably can even find them later, too. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily cross it off at the third round. I mean, if I'm correct, the Redskins, you know, they took Josh Doctson. He unfortunately got hurt. And I'm not saying Doctson is, you know, 6'10". He's 6'2", but he's certainly taller than some of the other wide receivers they had in the mix, and he was their first-round pick. We'll see what he does in year number two. Like I said, this was really pretty much a lost campaign because he got banged up. But, you know, I still think that there are quality wide receivers in this draft, and like you said, there are certainly free agents. And if they do want to bring in somebody for competition that is a good red zone target, there's nothing wrong with
that.
If
you wanted to bring in, let's say, Cup out of Eastern Washington, who we mentioned the other day on the show, he's supposed to be third round value. Lord knows he's got a wingspan. He's tall. He's got a wingspan. He catches the ball. He's a definite weapon, without question. I mean, his productivity at Eastern Washington's off the charts. And by the way, his father was a one-time Giant. Just throwing that out there. There's
the
a connection.
Bloodline.
There's a connection.
Yes.
Just saying.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Sean in Maryland. Sean, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Sean. What do you have for us?
All right, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had 2 points, and I had a question I wanted to throw out to you guys, and you let me know, you know, what you guys thought. I think for the offseason, our success is—it's imperative that we have a fullback. We need a fullback, a comparable fullback on the squad. He will improve and help our offense, and in so many ways, just as it did, you know, last year. And it was saying, you know, how good our offense was. It was because we had a fullback, and something as simple as that, just because we had a fullback. So we definitely need to pay attention to that in off season, so that, you know, we're ready, you know, come the first game. The second point.
Well, you want us to take these one at a time, or you want to wait till you're all done?
Yeah, wait till I'm all done.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll
go ahead.
Take them off there.
Sure thing.
The second thing I wanted to bring up is, you know, it's projected that we in the draft that we're looking at O.J. Howard, and
he won't be there. He won't be there.
You don't think he'll be there?
No, I don't want to cut you off, but if you're going to go to O.J. Howard, wipe him off the list because he's going to be gone before 20, maybe even 15.
Well, and the
he's
other
not going to be there.
And the other thing is, Sean, when you say projected, I mean everybody's making projections. I find it hard to believe that everybody's picking O.J. Howard for the job. There's like 75 million projections and mock drafts. Good luck trying to sum it up with one guy.
I'm willing to tell him, though, a lot of fans are calling up this show or tweeting us that they want him. So there are a lot of folks who target him for the Giants.
But there's
don't see him getting
tons
there.
Of other guys projecting 75 other million players for the Giants, too. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah.
Well, I thought it wasn't, it's possible because, if you look at the teams in front of us that need tight ends, I would think it's only like New Orleans and Tampa Bay.
But, Sean, all it takes is one team, doesn't it? All it takes is one team.
Yeah.
you can never say that that's going to be the way it falls because there's always somebody who might even trade up to go up ahead of you to grab somebody. Like, for example, when the Bears went to get Floyd last year.
Or there's a team that, on paper, have plenty of tight ends and just says, you know what, he's the best value where we're picking, and we're going to take him anyway.
I would just say this. I appreciate your desire to look at the player because he's a terrific player, and there's no doubt he would fit into so many rosters right now and have an immediate impact as well. I just don't think it's realistic to think he's going to be there at 23, but that's just my opinion.
Right. Okay. Agreed. And the last point was the last question I wanted to throw out to you guys. I don't know if anyone ever brought it up before on any day calling. Brian Quick, me and my buddy was talking. Brian Quick from the Rams, 6'4", receiver, 27 years old. He should be cheap. He's a skyscraper. He's young, and he hasn't had a lot of a lot of play.
Well, the only thing I'll jump in here, Sean, and say about Brian Quick that you have to look into is he's been plagued by injuries during the course of his young career. Even though he's young, he's missed some significant time. I think he had a torn ACL one season that pretty much cost him
14,
about a year.
He missed half a season in 14.
Yeah.
And also missed a couple of games in 15 as well.
That's the one flag.
You know, I think Holmes is healthier than he is, and they're both similar styles, similar body builds.
But I agree with you. I don't think Quick you're going to have to break open the bank for. It's as long as, you feel he's durable and he's put the other injuries behind him, I think he's certainly worth taking a chance on. It's just that's something you at least need to take into consideration.
What you do is you investigate.
Of course.
You put him on your radar and you take a look, And I would not say you don't consider the guy, but certainly there are questions that would need to be answered.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Thank
you. Sean, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
Reasons I like Holmes is he's a dynamo on special teams. And how great is it to have another guy who can play specials, especially when we've talked a lot about how the guys in that room, Lewis plays specials, Harris plays specials, but none of the other guys play specials. It's kind of a bonus if Holmes plays specials.
Well, that's what you call maximizing the 46 players that you dress.
In reference to the fullback thing, the Giants, both McAdoo and Reese, said at the end of the season they would reevaluate the decision not to have a fullback on the roster after Whitlock went down to injured reserve. At the same time, we do know that Will Johnson is here, and he can be the pseudo fullback this season if they decide to use him in that regard. Remember, what Jerry explained to us was the way the Giants playbook was constructed, apparently he and McAdoo had conversation, and if I'm interpreting this correctly, they felt he might only be on the field 5 or 6 plays a game.
No, that's the exact quote. We actually, because John and I read it yesterday because a similar question came up, and that was the main rationale, that they just didn't think a fullback would be fully utilized over the course of a season and didn't warrant taking up a spot on the 53.
Okay.
I mean, it's as simple as that.
If you think that Will Johnson's going to be healthy enough coming up in 2017, and I believe that he will, he's a guy who can play fullback 5 or 6 plays a game if you need him to. That's what he does. He's a pseudo fullback. Here's what I would agree with you on, though. Aside from Will Johnson, get a power back in here. Get a power back in here. Doesn't have to be a fullback. Just have to be a power back.
Well, the other thing that I brought up with respect to the fullback conversation yesterday, and I want to bring it up just to get your thoughts on it, I wonder aside from the rationale of perhaps the fullback was only going to be utilized for five or six plays, if the timing of Johnson's injury, Paul, impacted how much experimentation they were able to do with him to see what type of roles he could play in the offense. Because remember, he went down very early in the preseason. Limited practice time. You didn't really have a full opportunity to move him around during practice and see what he could do.
My information was that he was going to play an awful lot. He was a big part of the playbook in one way, shape, or form. Remember, inline tight end, H-back, move tight end, fullback. There were plans for him to use him in a variety of ways in this offense. He was going to work his butt off. This was going to be his breakout year. Not that he hadn't produced with the Steelers, but he was more of a role player there. He was going to be a significant part of what the Giants were going to do. He was going to be on the field a lot. I know that for a fact.
Well, and remember, in Pittsburgh, they had Heath Miller, who was a good two-way tight end. He could block,
yes,
and he could receive. He played
absolutely
behind him. Whereas the Giants said, hey, he's versatile enough. We could utilize him in a variety of different positions, and he could start for us, just like when Martellus Bennett came to the Giants compared to when he was playing behind Jason Witten. It's all about – it's not so much that the player wasn't good on his previous team. It's the fact that the opportunity just wasn't there for him to get on the field.
Just think about this for 1 second, okay? If you're a defensive coordinator – and the Giants are in a second down and four scenario. Okay, now, you know, in most cases in the last few years, Giants are going to go spread and they're going to throw it at a shotgun on second down and four. That's just the way it's going to happen. And, you know, I don't like that. It makes my skin crawl.
I can tell based on the voice, too.
Yeah. But now, oh, guess what? Hey, Will Johnson's on the field. What are we doing here with the sub package? Is Will Johnson going to line up online? Is he going to line up as a fullback? Is he going to line up as an H-back? What are they doing? Oh, they're running him out into the slot. Now what do we do? All of a sudden now, the whole pass run option takes on an entirely different dimension because Will Johnson can do that many things. That's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Tony is in Hoboken. Tony, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Tony. What do you got for us?
Yes. I actually just wanted to talk about right now what you guys were just talking about. With I believe Will Johnson will fill that role. And I really believe that Tavarius King is our outside receiver, just like Hogan. You know, Hogan was from all different teams. He came from all different teams. I think he played for four teams, correctly?
Well, he played for the Dolphins and the Bills before he came to the Patriots.
Okay. Well,
you're talking about Chris Hogan, right?
I feel just give him a shot. I mean, his last catch was a touchdown in the playoffs. And, tell me if you agree or not. I mean, did he not have a great preseason?
Hogan.
Wait, we're talking about Chris Hogan, though, right?
No.
Okay.
I'm talking about Tavarius King right now.
No, no, but the other player you were referring to.
I was just using Hogan as an example as Hogan, you know, was jumped around and practiced.
Well, yeah, he was with the Niners and the Giants practice squads, and then he actually got regular season play with the Dolphins and the Patriots.
Right.
So I was referring
Correct.
To the regular season action that he got. But, yes, prior to that, he was on practice squads, and King was on a few practice squads, was also with the Panthers in the regular season, and then now joined the Giants. So, I mean, similar in terms of your comparison.
Didn't
there.
Walker get bounced around twice?
I have to check that. It's possible. Yeah, he was definitely on the Dolphins. I don't know before the Dolphins, we could double-check whether or not Wes Welker
was around. I mean, it's not impossible that a guy could be a late bloomer. For example, look at Jonathan Casillas at linebacker this year. A late bloomer who had a career season, and all of a sudden he's a full-time player. It can happen, but it's kind of like catching lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, okay. And I just wanted to talk about something else also. It was talking about that, as far as JPP, I always want, like, at heart, I want him to be with the Giants.
Sure.
And I just came to realize after hearing other people speak and how it would be better to be more sure about keeping Hankins and being more sure about not releasing or cutting Cromartie because of his salary, which isn't much, but, you know, if they could get cut, they could get cut. I really believe they should cut Cruz because Cruz is a slot receiver. He plays the outside, but he has no separation. That's where Tavares King comes in because he has separation, and he's tall, and he's fast. I'm just saying, just give him a shot.
Tavares King, in my mind, that's the kind of guy who you bring back to training camp and you say, okay, fight for a job, compete, because we're going to bring in a couple of new guys too. And if you can win the job, wonderful. But you don't just give a roster spot to Tavares King out of the blue. You know, he's not Shepard and he's not Beckham. Yeah, you don't just give him a spot.
Same thing
you make him win it.
And same thing with Roger Lewis too.
Yeah,
you don't give
you make
him
win
a roster
it.
Spot either. You make him win it as
make
well.
Make him win it.
Yeah.
You won it once, win it again.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I also hope that they, you know, that when they do the, what is that called? Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot what that's called. Like who comes first, second, third on
draft
the,
depth chart?
The
you talk about
depth chart, yeah.
Yeah, the depth chart. Like, you know, I hope you know. I mean, I hope they don't cheat him. I'm trying to put him fourth.
Well, it depends on who's here. I mean, it's so hard to tell at this point.
You get what you earn.
Is going to look like. Yeah.
You get what you earn.
But they don't. They don't. You have to understand, Tony. They don't randomly like bring in guys and they're like, oh, he's only going to be fifth, and there's no way he can move up.
Yeah, Paul. Do you like Deontay Foreman?
I'm sorry.
Paul, do you like Deontay Foreman?
I have not. I have not scouted him yet.
Yeah. Well, look at him because you said you love a Lacy type, and he is a perfect fit. He is young and strong and powerful. You got to see him. You'll love him.
Well,
I actually got to go to work.
All right,
guys, I love
we'll let you,
guys.
You go.
Take a look at P. Ryan from Oklahoma. Okay.
Appreciate it, Tony.
All right.
Thanks so much for weighing in. He was referring to the Texas running back, by the way.
Well, I know who he is.
No, I'm not saying you
it.
Didn't know who he was. I'm just telling the audience in case they didn't know who he was talking about.
Fair enough.
Can't assume that everybody else out there knows who he was talking about.
I am shoulder deep in college basketball right now. So
well, I'm with you, too.
I know. So drafting, I start by looking at the All-Star games, which I've done, okay? Then I got to start making phone calls, and I got to start – digging. Then the shovel comes out, and you start really digging. Of course, there's free agency, too. Anybody who knows this show knows that by the time you get to the last 3 weeks or so of the draft, I've usually done workups on about 150 guys. But, you know, trust me, it's a cram session. I mean, there'll be like 2 weeks where I barely sleep to get those guys in because it's really not easy.
Be like a regular season. Where you barely sleep. So I don't think you've had enough reps where I don't know if everybody out there is sympathizing or they're empathetic to your cause at this point, considering we know that you go through that time and time again. Let's try to squeeze in another call or two. We got Nugs in Kansas City. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? Hope my phone doesn't go out this time.
No, you sound,
all right, Nugs, how you doing?
You sound much better today, Nugs, so we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Hey, yo, I kind of want to chime in on what you guys have been talking about because it's kind of what I've been thinking. As far as JPP, I would love to give him – I would love to have him back, but I think having that run defense is the number one thing. And when I looked at it as far as JPP, Okora, not saying that I didn't miss JPP a little bit, but I could see Okora with more reps and more time being someone who could probably bloom and fill that position for us. And I would hate to break the bank for JPP. As far as our receivers are concerned, I would like to see us go out and get Terrell Pryor. He's a big target. He's a speed demon. He's an outside threat. And he's somebody who we could get for cheap. I don't know about that, Nugs.
Nugs, that's where you lost us.
That last statement about
that's
getting
where you
for
lost
cheap,
us.
I would look closely at his numbers. He had, for a guy that transitioned from quarterback to wide receiver, hasn't been playing the position that long, he probably earned himself a nice payday.
Yeah, he's not coming cheap.
Yeah, he is not coming cheap.
No way.
Yeah.
You don't think he's coming cheap?
No, not at all.
I would be shocked.
Yes.
well, I would. well, put it like this. I was, you know, like I said, I always say this. I'm a fan, but I would like to see us take a look at him and see if we could squeeze him into our room. As far as Roger Lewis and Tavares King, I think we need more explosiveness out of our punt returners and our kick returners. I mean, I love Shepard. I think he should still be a core special teamer for us. But I think that, you know what I'm saying, letting one of those two guys take over the return duties for the whole offseason to get acclimated to that position will give us a little bit more bang from our punt returns and our kickoff returns. And in the draft, I don't want to see us draft nothing but line and pass rushers, man. I mean, let's get this line going and let's somehow figure out a power rushing game. Another thing is, or should I say a situational power rushing game. Another person who I think we could look at at fullback is Marcel Reese. I know he had some injury issues.
Former Raider.
But, hey, our current fullback has injury issues, but he's kind of a Swiss Army knife dude, too, that can play tight end, H-back, and fullback. And thanks for taking my call, and I'll take the answers online.
You got it, Nugs. Appreciate the phone call. I've been a fan of Marcel Reese. He's a very versatile player.
I like him, too.
Could be a running back. Could catch the ball out of the backfield. That's a good one.
Problem is, I don't think you want that second utility knife. If Will Johnson's going to be that guy, I don't see room for Reese on the team to do that.
Of course. Remember, the other thing is, and I'm not saying that there's any setbacks, but, you know, they have to look to make sure that Will Johnson's ready to go, too.
By the end of last season, he was, from what I understood.
Well, that's something at least that, you know, you have to be on top of it and so forth. The other thing that I just wanted to throw out on a side note with respect to Terrell Pryor, and I'm not trying to feed into the media buzz, but if you recall, after the Browns-Giants game, there was a little back and forth between Pryor and Jackrabbit. So you just wonder whether or not that is something you need to look into. And Pryor also went back and forth with a number of other players on other teams. So, you know, those are some of the things outside of the X's and O's that teams always need to do their homework on.
He's a little mouthy.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
You basically flat out. I was beating around the bush and you just cut right to the chase. That's why we're here together. With that being said, let's just take a quick glance at a few tweets that I thought were on topic and then we will wrap up shop. Let's see what else we have here from Ben Gruen. He brings up a point about Will Johnson, saying, if Johnson was going to be that important, then why didn't they use the IR designated to return on him instead of Shane Vereen? Which is a valid question.
Okay, I can answer that. In talking to Will during the course of the season, he was around occasionally in the locker room. We would see him passing through. And as it turned out, he probably couldn't have been ready to get on the field to even practice until the last third of the season or so. And, you know, they were already using as it turned out, they needed the IR retrievable on Vereen.
On Vereen, correct.
Yeah. At the time, their thinking was, we could probably get by, and we're going to be okay, and we don't need that guy. We don't need that versatile position. And so they IR'd him early. And I think, in my mind, the Will Johnson injury was incredibly significant in hampering this offense. I've said this 1,000 times. Vereen and Johnson were two underrated losses that this team suffered at the beginning of the season. And too many people overlooked it, and they were never able to overcome them.
Well, based on what you just said, based on NFL rules also, when they IR'd him, he was ineligible to be one of the guys designated
correct
to return.
Right, that's before the 53.
Yeah, that's first important to at least throw out there.
Yes.
The timing of when you IR guys right before the finalization of the 53 is something you need to take into consideration. And I think also based on what you alluded to, Paul, if you immediately say to yourself, we're going to IR this guy and then we can bring him back, you're then basically saying, God forbid somebody else gets hurt.
You've blown your spot.
In week four, you can't bring anybody else back.
That's your one silver bullet.
Exactly. So you may not want to even do that before the season starts, because then all of a sudden, if a wide receiver gets hurt, your quarterback, God forbid, you're not giving yourself any wiggle room or flexibility.
It's a painful thing to have to spend that spot at that point of the year. That's something you don't want to do.
So that obviously played a big role in terms of the rationale behind that. Vic at NFL NYG 43, just for some comic relief here. I think it's time to make the call to Ramsey's Barden when we were talking about the height situation. You can't teach height, as we've always have thrown out.
You know what? He's one of the guys who really disappointed me over the years. I thought that that there would be a lot more there, but the intangibles just didn't come to come to a head.
Well, and that's another example right here before we close up shop, the fact that, hey, height's great, but remember, you need to see something else out of the player other than he just stands 6'4 or 6'5. So height is great, and you could go out and get any big guy you want, undrafted players, mm-hmm. but they've got to have a little bit more versatility too. That's why when players and fans say, you know, hey, we need to bring in somebody that's a little bit taller,
and
need to show a little bit more than that.
And they've got to be eager, willing, and aggressive to improve and polish up their game.
Absolutely.
Enough said.
We will address some of the rest of your tweets that we didn't do here on the show off the air. Certainly appreciate all the comments on Twitter as well as your phone calls. Big Blue Kickoff Live, as always, with you every day, Monday through Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern. So we'll look forward to interacting with you the rest of the week. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com.